Okay, Shavua Tov, we're in Perek Yutes Nechos Ishus. What the Rambam takes up in this Perek is a certain clash that takes place between two principles. So one principle is the Doraisa, the Torah imperative of Yorshim, of the inheritors, being able to inherit what's owed to them from the estate. So for example, if when dad dies, so now... there's Nachala and there's Metalton and stuff like that to split up between the Yorshim. And that's a Deoraisa idea. And then there's the Rabbanan idea that the Yorshim also inherit the Ksuba. Because remember, the Ksuba is a Derabbanan. The Ksuba itself is rabbinical in origin. So the cases that are going to come up, at least for the most of this parak, are going to be cases where there's a clash or a conflict between the rabbinical imperative of Yorshim inheriting the Ksuba from their mother, versus the imperative of Yorshim dividing up their father's estate among themselves, which comes from the Torah. So as you'll see, so Halacha Aleph Rambam says, Mitanaya Ksuva, so some of the conditions of the Ksuva include, Sheyu Banim HaZecharim Yorshim Ksuvas Iman, right? So one of the provisions of every Ksuva is that the sons, okay, the male heirs, okay, of the mother, of the wife, will inherit her Ksuva. Okay, the nidunyasa sheichnisa betoras nechset on barzal, as well as the nidunya that she brought in as nechset on barzal. V'achra cholkun shar yusha imachem b'shavet. So after they inherit the ksuba, okay, that would come first. They would inherit any money that's owed to them from the ksuba of their deceased mother. Then they can start getting into the issue of the rest of the estate, how that's going to be divided up equally. So, in a sense, the order here would be actually they exercise the rabbinical condition first, and then the Doraisa one. But you'll see in Halacha Beis how the Rambam works this out. He says in Halacha Beis Ketzah. So Nasa Isha Ksuvasa. Let's say a man married a woman, and the Ksuva v'Nidunyasa and the Nidunya Elef. Okay, so together the entire value of the Ksuva plus the stuff that the woman brought into the marriage with her was worth 1,000. Okay. The Yalda Bain, and what happens? She has a son, Umesa Bechayov, okay, and she dies while her husband is still alive. Okay, so again, he marries a woman, the Ksuva is worth 1,000, the Ksuva and the Nedunya are worth 1,000. V'akrach Nasa Isha Charis, and then what happens? Okay, he marries another woman, okay, and by the way, most of these cases usually end up being cases of marrying more than one woman, which is why it's not really applicable today. But anyway, he marries another woman, Ksuvasa V'Nedunyasa Masayim. So let's say the value of the ksuba and the nedunya for the second wife is 200, okay? They'll lead a bain, and she has a child, umesa b'chayev, okay? And she also dies while her husband's alive, okay? So again, in the first wife, the ksuba and the nedunya are worth 1,000, right? And then she dies after having a son. And then the second wife is 200, zuz is the value of the ksuba and the nedunya, and she has a son, and she dies while the husband's still alive. V'achrach mesu. And afterwards, he dies. And now, the total value of his assets is 2,000. So remember, from the 2,000, technically speaking, 1,000 is owed through the ksuva / adunya of wife one. And 200 is ksuva adunya from wife two. So the Rambam is going to calculate how this is divided up. So benomin arishona. Okay, so the son from the first wife, Yorish Elef. Okay, so he would inherit 1,000. Sheksuvas imo. Okay, because that's the ksuba of his mother, right? So remember, the first wife, the ksuba was 1,000. So he gets the ben of the first wife gets 1,000. Ubeno min hashnia, and the son from the second wife, Yoash Masayim, shev ksuvas imo, right? So the second son would inherit 200. So far, so good. The hashar yorshim oso b'shava. Now, the remainder, okay, if we recall, the estate's worth 2,000, right? They've inherited 1,200, 1,000 for the first son, 200 for the second one. Now they have basically what they call it, 800 to play with. Nimsa biad ben arishona elef rabamios. So the first son would inherit 400. So that means that the total he would get is 1,000 from the first ksuva, from his mother's ksuva, plus 400 from splitting the estate in half. Ubiad ben shnia sheshmeos. And the second son would get the 200 of the ksuva of his mother, along with 400 by splitting the estate in half. So the upshot is that this is a classic example of exercising the rabbinical imperative of inheriting the ksuba, followed by splitting the estate in half between the yorshim. Okay? This is when it works normally. Okay? Good. Halacha gimel. Now, what's the qualification? B'medvar amurim, b'sheiniach yeser, Al kidei shtei ksuvas dinar echad o yeser kidei shyichlku ashar b'shavet. Now here's the problem. There always has to be a situation for this to work where you exercise the rabbinical provision first and then split the rest of the estate. It's only if the value of the estate is obviously worth more than the combined value of the two ksuvas. Okay, so in this situation, he had 2,000 zuz against 1,000 in one ksuva and 200 in the other ksuva. So there will be 800 zuz remaining. Okay, this way, there's that which they can now divide up among each other afterwards, meaning there has to be, after the kids inherit from the ksuvas, an opportunity for them to split some money from the estate. Avaim lo inyech yeser dinar, but let's say he did not leave more than a dinar, meaning if they went ahead and inherited the ksuvas, right, there would be nothing for them to split between them. Cholkim akol b'shava. Then they go back to the Doraisa imperative and actually split the estate in half. Okay? Which is a very interesting idea how that works. Why? She'im yirshu eilo ksuvas iman ve'eilo ksuvas iman. Because if each son inherited the entire ksuba of their respective mothers, v'lo yishar dinar echad lachlok oso bena yorshim, and what would end up happening is that there'd be no money left to actually split among the yorshim. Nimsa tanai zeh mevatel chelak yerusha bena banan mishava shumina Torah. So what's going to happen here? The tanai durabanan of them inheriting the ksuba is getting rid of preventing the Doraisa idea of them splitting up the Yerusha equally. So here's a situation where it wouldn't work. Again, just to be clear, in this situation, since the estate is going to be, let's use our case before, 1,000 is one ksuba, 200 the other ksuba, and now let's say the estate's only worth 1,000. Well, now you're going to have a problem. So we don't say, still to go ahead and take care of the ksuba, rather what we say is that the ksuba's out, and they would split the estate 500, 500, and ignore the rabbinical prohibition of, or work out some type of calculation to make sure they don't ignore the Doraisa imperative. Okay? So that's the test. The Halacha Beis is the ideal case. Halacha Gimel shows how it doesn't work. Halacha Dalet. And not only that, if we would din, Lemishan Asa Nashim Rabos, right? And this isn't limited just a case where he married two wives, but multiple wives, right? One second. yeah, okay. Bein bezu acharzu, bein bebas achas, right? And it doesn't matter if he married multiple women one after the other or all together at once. Umesu kuma mechayav, and they all died while he was still alive. Vilo mehen banim zaharim. Im hayasham yesra al kadei kolok subas dinar kol echad ve'echad yorish ksubas imo v'shar cholka b'shava. As long as the value of his estate is more than the combined value of all the ksubas together, so let's say five wives, let's say he had 10,000 zuz in ksuba value, his estate must be worth at least 10,001. So this way they have that which they're able to be mechalek b'shava. Okay. Halacha hei. Now amru hayisomim. So let's say the Yisomim come along and say as follows. They say, they know we're in a situation where there's no way that the estate is valuable enough to take care of both the ksuba and splitting up assets. So let's say, again, going back to make a simple case, the ksubas are worth 1,000, the estate's worth 800, okay? And what do they say? They say, Hare e anu malin al nichse avinu yeser dinar, kadesh yitlu ksubas iman. Okay, so what do they say? They say, you know what we'll do? We're going to increase our father's estate, okay? We're going to increase the value of our father's estate, which is at 800, to let's say 1,000, 1,100. And this way, we'll get the ksuva, right? And we'll still fulfill the right idea of splitting up the assets. Ain't shomen lahem. We don't do this. We don't allow this to take place. Ela shomenetz and echasim bebezin. Rather, what do? The assets are evaluated, for their value in bezin. It always goes by the value of the estate at the time the father passes away. So they can't change that. So even if the value of the estate increase or decrease post the death of the father, before they actually go to distribute the assets, we always evaluate the value of the assets, property, and metatlin at the time of the father's death. We don't care about what happens afterwards. Okay, halacha vav. Hayasham yeser al kadei kolok subas dinar yeser. Now, let's say the value of the father's estate is more than the combined value of the ksuvas, okay? $1 or more. Afabi sheyesh alav shtar chov. Now, this is the counter. Even if there is an outstanding debt owed by the father to someone else, kenegede a yeser. Okay, so let's say the situation was that the estate's worth the ksubas are worth 1,000. The estate is worth 1,500, but the father left an outstanding debt of 1,000. Right, so we don't take that debt and include it in the valuation of the estate. We don't subtract the outstanding debt from the overall value of the estate, and this allows for the rabbinical provision of collecting the ksubas to still take place. Okay, halacha zayin. So let's say a guy is married to two women. Okay, umesa achas behen bechayev. Okay, so one dies while the husband's still alive. The achas achar moso, and the other one dies after he dies. Okay, so again, he's got two wives. One dies while he's still alive. One dies after he dies. Okay. Okay. What do you call it? The lo bana mishnayim, and he has sons from each one. Okay, so the wife that died while he was alive, he had a son from her, and the wife that died after he died, also a son. Afal pi shelo hiniach yeser al shtei ksubos. So afal pi shelo hiniach yeser al shtei ksubos. Now, let's say the estate is worth less than the combination of both ksubos. Again, cases 1,000. Let's say 1,000 zuz for the both ksubas, his estate's worth 500. Im nishba hashniya shvuas almana kol mishatamus. If the second wife, okay, made the shvuas almana, which is the one you make in order to collect the ksuba before she died, banea kodman liarish ksubasa. Then her sons come first in inheriting the ksuba, even though the combined value is less than the value of the estate. Im neishain yorshin ksubas ima matanizeh liyusha shel Torah. Why? Because they don't get to what it called. It's very simple. They don't inherit their mother's ksuba because of the rabbanan imperative inheriting the ksuba, rather because of the derais imperative of inheriting. The akrachach yorshim bnei harishona ksubas yom b'nai zeh, and then the sons of the first wife who died while the husband was still alive, then they go ahead and inherit the ksuba based on the tanai ksuba. All right, so in this situation, the second sons would inherit based on Yerusha ideas, midaraisa, and the first sons would inherit based on Ksuvas Imam Pnaizet, which is the rabbinical one. Then Nishar Sham Klum, Cholkin Oso B'Shava, and if there's anything left over after that, the inheritors split up the rest. Now, V'im Mesa Kodem Shetishba, V'im Mesa Kodem Shetishba. Let's say she died before she was able to make the shvua of collecting our ksuva, then b'nei harishona yorshim ksuvas imam bovad, then the sons of the first wife only a yorish the ksuva, and then v'ashar cholka b'shava. Because since she didn't make the shvua, she wasn't entitled to the ksuva yet, and therefore the inheritors would divide everything up equally. Allah chachas. Now, haya nasri shtei nashim. Once again, he's married to two women. V'lo mehen banim. And he has sons through both wives. Umes. And he dies. Okay? And then after he dies, then they die. Okay, then the wives die. Okay, im nishbu v'acharkach mesu kol echav echad. Now, as long as they took the shvua, okay, before they died, okay, kol echav. Excuse me, kol echav echad yorch ksuvas imo b'yusha shel Torah v'lo b'tanai zeh. So as long as they made the as long as they made the shvua, okay, prior to. Prior to their deaths, meaning the shvua on collecting the ksuba, then the yorshim would be entitled to inherit based on Yerusha Deraisa and not because of inheriting ksuba. So what does that mean? Lefikach. Eim mashgichin im yesham mosar or einsham. So therefore, it doesn't matter if the estate is worth more than the value of the ksuba in these situations, because they're not relying on the rabbanon inheriting the ksuba. They're entitled to this because of she made the shvua, dad's already died, and then they died. They're entitled to just virtue of them being yorsha. Okay? The yorsha harishona come with yorsha shnia. And who would come first? The yorshim of the sons of the first wife come before the second one. Now, in lo nishbu, let's say the women did not make a shvua before they died, cholken ubanim b'chol shaveh, then the son just split it up evenly. Vein sham yurusha ksuva, and there's no idea of yurusha ksuva at all. The v'yishein l'almana ksuva ashatishba, because the almana does not acquire the money owed to her from the ksuva until she actually makes the shvuas almana. Okay, so again, you're seeing now how these two principles work together, or actually, I'm sorry, don't work together, conflict with each other. Halacha tes. Now, achas nishba v'achas no nishba. So in the case before, where a guy married two women, he dies, okay? Then one makes a shvua, the other one does not make the shvua, a shvua salmana, and they both die. So the woman who made the shvua, her sons are yorish the ksuva first. And anything left over, they would divide the estate up equally. The chol yorish ksuvas imo shemesa bechaye aviv. Whenever a son, whenever the inheritor inherits the ksuva of his mother when she dies while dad's still alive, eino toref minechasta mishubadim. Right, he does not have the right to go ahead and take back property that was sold to others. Rather, he only inherits property that is, so to speak, it's muchsak, but in the control of the estate at the time that the father passed away. And we'll see more of that when we way down the road when we get to Nachalos and how Yerusha works. Halacha Yud. Okay, that's the first chunk of this parak. Now the Rambam continues with similar ideas of Tanai Ksuba. Habanos. Now we're going to turn to the daughters. Okay, the daughters. One of the provisions of the ksuba includes that daughters nizonos v'nechzei aviyin achar moso. Right. So after dad dies, there's a part of the idea of a ksuba built into the tenai of the ksuba is that his daughters will be supported from the ksuba. Right. Again, mizonos wise, just basic mizonos. Okay. After he dies, from his property. So the father's estate is in a sense. A portion of it belongs, so to speak, to the daughters via the ksuba, okay? Remember, we're not talking about Yerusha, we're talking about Tanai ksuba, okay? So, ad she yisarsu o she yivgoru. So, this is obviously referring to when they're very young. So, it's either when they get engaged at a very young age, or if they're not at Bagris yet. So, either situation, when they're very young, so there's still responsibility via the ksuba of mizonos being applied to the daughters. Okay, bagar habas. Now, let's say she still retains the status of being like one of the daughters, and therefore she still inherits, she still gets mizonos. Aval basa yevama, basa shnia, basa ruso, basa nusa. Okay, in these situations you have the daughter of a yevama or the daughter of a shnia. Remember that shnia by Arias. Ubasa rusa, if she's the daughter of a situation where only erisin was done. Ubasa anusa. Okay, that's a situation of rape. Ain lo mizonos achar misas avian. She would not get mizonos after her father dies. B'tanai zeh, using these conditions. Ava bechay avian, but if her father's still alive, who chayav mizonos son? He's chayav to provide for her. K'din shar banos bechay avian. She'd be no, even though her birth was came about through an inappropriate or usher situation, he's still responsible to provide for her. Just like his regular kids, even though her birth, so to speak, came through a situation that was inappropriate. We'll do one more. Halacha tesvav hamares bas. Okay, let's say a man does kedushin to a young girl min ha'achin. Excuse me, hamares bas. Hanizonos mina achim chay minozeh mishas erusin. Okay, so let's say there's a young girl who's receiving mizonos from her brothers, right? And he goes ahead and marries her when she's still a young girl. So they're no longer. So he's automatically chayev to provide her mizonos once the erusin takes place. Shara'in la mizonos me'achia meshinis arsa, because she can no longer get mizonos from her brothers once the kedushin takes place. Ve'ena bogeres. But she's also not a bogeres that she can provide for herself. Now the katano nara, she's still too young for that. Now ultimately, vein adam rotsa shetiz baza rusaso. A man never wants his wife to go ahead and be, so to speak, embarrassed and denigrated. And have to beg for sustenance to be able to survive.